This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 122.
If you take away a lot of the chance and the gut feeling and whatever these old fashioned hiring processes had baked in and say, hey, we're going to have everybody go through the same thing, get assessed in the same way, you see more diversity come through and you see better candidates come through. That's happening. A lot of that standardization is already happening for a lot of companies. A lot of companies are still kind of stuck in this, hey, I look at a resume and I hire someone who's done that exact same job before. And that's just not going to work as we move forward. Jobs are changing so quickly and there's so many jobs that are completely new. So you can't hire someone that's done that job before because no one's done that job before.
How will AI shape the future of hiring from a candidate and company perspective? How can AI help to assess skills and human potential in the hiring process? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Hey everyone, I'm excited to announce an amazing resource for next-gen HR leaders that has been 2 years in the making. After conducting over 100 interviews over the last 2 years with the top minds in our field, I have put all the best advice into what I call the HR Leaders Blueprint, career acceleration strategies from 100+ industry thought leaders. The HR Leaders Blueprint is completely free and filled with more than 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders. This guide delivers exactly what you need to know about building influence, driving business results, and accelerating your career. And just like the Future of HR Podcast, the HR Leaders Blueprint is filled with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to help take your career and impact to the next level. To download the HR Leaders Blueprint, go to futureofhr.com. That's futureofhr.com. And if you want to get a jump start on your 2025 career goals, then you do not want to miss out on the HR Leaders Blueprint. And with that, my guest this week is Lindsay Zuloga. Lindsay is the chief data scientist at HireVue, where she's leading a team that builds and validates machine learning algorithms to predict job-related outcomes. As an academic researcher with a PhD in applied physics, she's performed novel experiments with data analytics, resulting in scientific publications and applications in medicine, sensing, and signal processing. Lindsay started her career in data science and healthcare, striving to improve the lives of people with chronic health conditions. And at HireVue, she's working to completely transform traditional interviewing with a platform that focuses on understanding more about the candidate as a whole person, including interview responses, coding abilities, and cognitive skills, as opposed to just the facts shown on a resume. I really enjoyed my conversation with Lindsay, and I know you will too, as we discussed why she calls herself a techno-realist and what that means, why it's a misconception that AI, not humans, make the final hiring decisions, how evaluating and testing AI tools can prevent falling prey to overhyped and ineffective solutions, the potential of AI to remove traditional biases in the hiring process, and how focusing on potential and assessing skills over past experiences can transform hiring practices. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Lindsay. Lindsay, welcome to the Future of HR Podcast. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks for being here. We're excited to talk with you. You have a fascinating background, and I'm curious how you went from applied physics to revolutionizing hiring practices with AI at HireVue. That's quite the journey.
Yeah, it was like a lot of careers, not necessarily planned from the beginning, right? I never expected to be working in HR tech, but I was always interested in math growing up, but didn't realize what it was used for until I took physics. And so that's a big part of my journey, was falling in love with science, falling in love with physics, and understanding how math is used in the real world. And then I had a really influential high school teacher that kind of steered me in that direction. So I went to college. No one in my family had ever gone to college before. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I decided I was going to go for it and major in physics. I was pretty nervous that I might not succeed, but ended up just continuing and getting a PhD and doing research, doing a postdoc in physics. And when I transitioned from academia to industry, I had a rough experience like a lot of people do applying for a job. I thought, you know, I'm doing well in academia and it's really difficult, so I should be fine. But getting a job when you haven't had a job before, but you're kind of overqualified for a lot of entry level jobs, was tricky. And I experienced this broken process that so many of us have been through, applying and uploading your resume and your cover letter and then having to type everything in again. And you're trying to make it specific to that job description. And then you often just like never hear anything. That kind of was for me like a big part of what made me passionate about working in this space, is trying to make it more efficient, more fair, trying to, for the candidate, help people get matched to their best jobs and hear back in a timely manner and kind of fix a lot of what's broken in hiring.
That's great. So that's probably like why you're doing what you're doing today. But I want to go back a little bit, because you talked about the fact that you probably wouldn't have even like gotten into math or applied physics without that math teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about what happened there. It's a cool story. I mean, I think it's just some people really make a huge impact on our life. I'd love to know a little bit more.
Yeah, I was a physics teacher, actually, and I had written something, a little essay about it that I have on my LinkedIn profile, kind of buried back several years ago. But I got chosen to be in this physics class my senior year. It was actually a college level course. And before that, I felt like I'd been kind of plugging in the numbers and doing the thing in math, algebra, basically, that was pretty easy. And they said, hey, you're good at this. So I got asked to be in this class, and it was different than anything I'd ever done. The teacher was kind of a mad scientist, old guy who was really funny. He was very much in character. Like, I realize now, like, he knew exactly what he was doing, making us laugh and kind of being this character. But everything we learned was like, we experimented with it in the real world. So we're always blowing things up and doing games where we'd have to calculate when to fire this flaming dart into this balloon that would pop and make a really loud noise because it was on a pendulum or something like that. So tying it to the real world and making it fun really worked for me. And I had seen so much math that I thought it was kind of this abstract world. And then coming in, I remember thinking like, oh, the quadratic formula is used in like the kinematic equations of motion. Like, this is actually relevant in the real world. That kind of opened up my eyes to just seeing the whole world differently. And yeah, he passed away a few years after I was in his class, actually. But I did make sure to like let him know what a big influence he had on me, and that I ended up studying physics for so many years just because of him.
That's so cool. And that's so great that it helps you understand like how this can be applied. Because I do think, you know, having young children myself and thinking back even to high school, a lot of people are like, I don't need to know this. I'm never going to do this. This doesn't apply to real life. So it actually has for you in the role you're doing now. And of course, making that transition to help people be able to get jobs, even if they seem overqualified or have PhD, but maybe it was challenging to get that first job. Besides being a data scientist and AI ethicist, you call yourself a techno-realist. Tell us more about what this means.
I love technology, but I do feel like techno-optimism sometimes kind of glosses over a lot of the challenges that we encounter with technology. We do need to proceed with caution. I'm not of the mind of just let the tech just keep going and it will solve all of our problems. We really do have to be realistic about what these powerful tools can do and the problems they can solve and the problems they can cause. Having that balance without sliding into like complete pessimism is important. We're on this train, whether we like it or not, the train is moving, and we want to make sure that we keep it on the right track.
Think about AI for a moment. Do you believe, are you optimistic, realistic, or pessimistic? And my main question is, are we going to be working for the robots in a few years or not? I feel like that's where we're going.
I'm pretty optimistic. I may be overly optimistic. I just, in looking historically and kind of how humans have adapted to technological change, and yeah, it's moving faster and faster. Is it going to move at a pace that we can't keep up? I think that will be the limit a little bit. Like, the speed limit is what we can keep up with. We do have to grow and evolve and change faster. And I think I tell everyone, even if you're not technical, just go play with ChatGPT and learn what it does and what it's good at and what it's not good at. And it's never been so accessible to just not be afraid of the tech and get in there. I know it's easy to think, well, I didn't study that. I don't know. I'm not like an AI person, but a lot of people are using it now and getting experience with it. So I think I'm pretty optimistic about what it can help us do, that we can automate a lot of the tasks that are really awful and boring for humans to do, so we can focus on the things we like and the things that we're good at.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think about it as, I hope that AI sort of becomes the dishwasher. First thing you can do is wash the dishes, or maybe the vacuuming, whatever horrible chore you don't want to do, AI can do that. I feel like a lot of CEOs think it's going to be able to wash the dishes, vacuum, paint the house, build a new house, right? A little bit is not as realistic as it might be when you start to dig into what AI can sort of do, but I hope it does take away some of that transactional work.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype, and I think we're certainly not there yet with a lot of the kind of nuanced tasks, but it's interesting to think about where we might be in 20, 30 years and the kind of overlap of intelligence and consciousness and like all these questions about what is this going to become? What will it be able to do? Do we finally reach that point where like humans don't have a lot to do or we're obsolete? I mean, we've been afraid of that for a very, very long time. So I still retain that optimism that we'll find our place with it. And of course, I love the efficiency gains. I love the automation of things that are not fun to do. So a lot of my work does center around how to make sure algorithms are being fair. So I do feel like I'm pretty close to that field of research and watching with caution.
So that's exactly why we wanted to have you on the podcast. And one question I wanted to ask you around this is like, what's a common misconception about AI and hiring that you'd like to debunk and just say, that's not really true? Because I feel like there's a lot of myths around AI and recruiting right now.
Yeah. Ooh, probably the biggest thing I encounter is people thinking that like, because we're using AI in hiring, we're just doing something completely new. Actually, like assessing people for jobs and understanding how they fit with different jobs is 100 years old, right? Like people have been doing this, but just in a lower tech way. And in a lot of ways, it's been algorithms, but not machine learning algorithms, but dumb algorithms, things like looking for a certain keyword in your resume that a human decided is important. So we're evolving in how we do it, and we do it better, right? Like we want to assess people in a way that has more nuance. We're not just having you take like a pencil paper multiple choice test that takes a long time and is an unpleasant experience, but we're having you answer some interview questions, go through playing games or some kind of like on the job task, like, hey, you're applying to work in a call center, listen to this recording and verify this information. So we can see like with a lot of face validity, who actually is performing well at the tasks that are relevant to this job and get the right people on the right jobs. And that's a win-win. I mean, our customers are companies, but we call candidates our customers. The candidate experience is really important to us because that reflects on our customers and their brand and their employees that they ultimately hire. We're using different tools now, but it's not a completely new area. There are laws and best practices and guidelines about bias in hiring that have been around a really long time, and those still apply. So I think for a lot of AI applications, people are like, this is just a complete wild west. And that is true in some applications, but we're lucky in hiring to have a lot of that groundwork laid for us. Like, hey, the EEOC says these are the statistics you need to look at to make sure that your pre-hiring assessment or the process is fair. All that still applies. All the Americans with Disabilities Act, all the things that are already established are there. So not completely new Wild West stuff.
I know it's not completely new Wild West stuff. And I think that's great to mention because you're right. There's a lot of science on hiring. We've been doing a lot of this for a long time. So I think that's a really good point to remind us. Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Lindsay. Are you ready to take your career to the next level? If you are, then you need to download the HR Leaders Blueprint, featuring battle-tested strategies from over 100 HR thought leaders and CHROs. This comprehensive 18-page guide delivers actionable steps, strategic frameworks, and real-world insights to elevate your impact. No theoretical fluff, just proven tactics to becoming a business-focused HR leader. And the best part, it's completely free. To download the HR Leaders Blueprint, go to futureofhr.com. That's futureofhr.com. And if you want to get a jumpstart on your 2025 career goals, then you do not want to miss out on the HR Leaders Blueprint. But you've also said, and I thought this is really great, that fairness is complicated, but ethics or not. Help us unpack that idea a little bit more, because I think when people think about hiring, we all believe in ethics, but the fairness piece, tell us more about what you mean there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Algorithmic fairness is a whole area of research. There's pretty standardized ways of looking at fairness, but there are other applications, like you're a data scientist and you're building a content recommendation system for social media. Where do you even start to think about whether you're putting people in these bubbles or what's fair and what's not? It's easy for people to kind of throw in the towel and be like, this is so complicated. How do you define fairness? The whole idea ethics is not complicated. From a moral perspective of doing the right thing, you have to just ask those hard questions and get into, for us, for example, we do have definitions of fairness, but there are ways that hiring algorithms can satisfy the EEOC guidelines and still have some problems. Like they break some other definition of fairness, having wildly different accuracies for different demographic groups or for gender. Looking at all of those together to kind of get a whole picture, even though only some of them are the check the box that we need to do, is really important. It's just using common sense a lot of times. Of the many algorithms that we have that we can use, how do we weigh all of these different ways of looking at fairness?
It's an interesting example. And I think more importantly, we're the ones setting up some of the guidelines, right? AI is really a prediction machine, but we have to set the parameters around what we want them to predict or what the algorithms are going to predict. Is that correct? Is that fair to
say? Absolutely.
So then humans have to make a final decision, especially like in the hiring process, et cetera, because, and I think sometimes people believe that we've given up the power to AI or the machines, when the reality is that's a decision someone made to do that. And we do that. Mm-hmm. Like we have, and this is made up perfect, but if you're thinking about Google Maps or whatever, and it's taking you a different direction, or I'll use Waze, I'm following the directions, the decision, what Waze is telling me to do. I don't have to do that though. But it's giving me what, based on probabilities, is the fastest way to wherever I'm going. And I think it's similar in organizations for hiring. Yes, we have a direction where we're going. We have to decide if we're going to follow every guideline and make the decisions for us along the way, or when do we want a human to make that intervention and take a look at it. I think that's what people are struggling with, because I think a lot of those don't know when that it's a fine line, or maybe it's invisible in some of the hiring processes of like, well, who gets to make that call? Who made the decision in the algorithm? Then what the cut score was if someone didn't pass an assessment. Is that the right cut score?
Yeah, there's so much human involvement. We don't have any customers that use algorithms to make their final hiring decision. It's always human at that stage. But I think it's a misconception that people have, right? We did a survey this year and with candidates and HR professionals. And yeah, like candidates overwhelmingly are like, I just don't want the AI to make the final hiring decision. And they often assume that it did, right? You apply for a job and you didn't get it. And you're like, well, it's because of AI. The truth is most of our customers have sometimes hundreds or thousands of applicants for one role. So just the numbers are not in the favor of the candidate. And I have my hopes for the future of how that kind of requisition-based hiring might change to help people find jobs rather than applying to each job separately and going through that process. But yeah, I think like, being a candidate is kind of rough, and making sure people understand what's going on. Like you said, human in the loop. And I think trust and transparency is so important. That's been a big part of our journey. We used to keep our IP close to the vest, and then we realized transparency is good for business. If we don't tell people what we're doing, they assume far worse about what's going on. So making sure we publish very clearly, we have an explainability statement, like, this is what we're doing. We've done third-party audit so that people feel more comfortable. I think of a kind of a famous example in machine learning is this algorithm that was built to predict whether a picture was a wolf or a husky. And it was something like over 90% accurate. Okay, great, it worked. And when you look at it and actually use an explainability technique to see what part of the image is informing that classification, it was looking at the snow in the background. So it just so happened that this data set, most of the pictures of the wolves had snow in the background and of huskies did not. So seeing something like that suddenly shifts, like, oh, I don't trust the algorithm anymore. Even though it's accurate, it's not looking at the right thing. So I think poking and prodding algorithms and making sure you trust what they're doing is so important.
Let's change gears a little bit, because I also know you guys are doing and you're seeing some really cool, exciting developments around AI-driven selection and selection processes that are enhanced by AI tools. What are you excited about? What are you seeing? What's the future hold for hiring and leveraging AI?
I'm excited about having more standardization in the process, like AI or no. We have a lot of results from our customers that show they get huge like diversity benefits. There's no affirmative action happening here. It's just if you take away a lot of the chance and the gut feeling and whatever these old fashioned hiring processes had baked in and say, hey, we're going to have everybody go through the same thing, get assessed in the same way. You see more diversity come through and you see better candidates come through. That's happening. A lot of that standardization is already happening for a lot of companies. A lot of companies are still kind of stuck in this, hey, I look at a resume and I hire someone who's done that exact same job before. And that's just not going to work as we move forward. Jobs are changing so quickly and there's so many jobs that are completely new. So you can't hire someone that's done that job before because no one's done that job before. So how do you think about skills and potential? I'm excited how AI can help with that. There are a lot of problems that have been really difficult to solve for decades, like resume parsing is one. Like I was saying, when you apply for a job through these ATS and you put in your resume and it tries to parse it and it's like, you got to go fill out the whole thing yourself. You'd be shocked to go to ChatGPT today and put in your resume and you'd be surprised. Like weird formatting, whatever. It will answer questions about you. So my example was, I said, does Lindsay know calculus? Yeah, she probably does because she studied physics, but I don't have the word calculus in my resume. It's just amazing, just out off the shelf, how well it worked. And another one is understanding skills. Companies have been trying to build and skill taxonomies and keep them up to date. And it's just so much manual work. A lot of these generative AI systems, just even out of the box, have a really good understanding of, here's this person. I want this job. What do I need to learn? What is the gap between those two things? How can I develop my career to move toward this direction? So great thing to go play with ChatGPT. This kind of stuff will be built in more and more to product. So what I'm thinking about with innovation is a lot more candidate centric, especially if you've taken an assessment that is really valuable data. That's more valuable than what's on your resume or what's on your LinkedIn. We should be using that to help you find a job and not just saying, hey, good luck, go apply for another one. That's how it works at most companies, is this like one job at a time model.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating for people who are, you know, applying, especially you have to go and just apply to Workday 5-10 different times, different companies that doesn't talk to each other. So that I've heard that or seen that online on LinkedIn and people really frustrated about that. But I also agree that there's obviously some innovations that can happen there. Talk to us a little bit more about how AI can reduce unconscious bias. Has this been effective so far? What are some of the innovations you're seeing there? You talked about the standardization, which gets better, broader equity because everyone's being more standardized and it's more fair. But what about unconscious bias? Is that similar or different?
Yeah. Standardization, measuring job-related things and doing it all in the same way. That's backed by science. We have a big team of industrial organizational psychologists. We learned early on, we started building these AI video assessments and we learned like, whoa, a bunch of our customers are asking people like what their spirit animal is. Their stuff's not a good question. So helping have good interviews and measure things that are important for the job that actually matter. AI itself, just from a mathematical perspective, what's really great is that you can remove bias from an algorithm in a way that you can't do with a human mind. We've seen the headlines which say AI can be biased, and it's absolutely true. It's really good at recognizing pattern. If you have some bias, it can exacerbate that bias. But if you're careful and you say, hey, we don't just want this algorithm to predict something accurately, we will penalize it for having differences in how it predicts that thing between demographic groups. You can find a really good algorithm that's also very fair at the same time. So an example I would use, and again, this is all automated, it's not a human decision, but things like, for example, maybe women talk about childcare more than men. If there were bias in your training data, the algorithm could say, oh, okay, anytime someone mentions kid, that's a ding for them. And you don't want that. So you can just simply take that. That would be removed. If something was causing bias, the algorithm would no longer be looking at that thing. It's really exciting because, like I said, humans, we don't have that ability to just pluck that piece of their brain out.
Right. So there sounds like there's really some different innovations that can come through that. And depending on who you're working with or the organization or how you're getting your AI and your tools, it sounds like you've got to continue to evolve and monitor what you're getting out and really continue to check. Are you having unconscious bias? Are you having any impact, adverse impacts, things like that are happening in your hiring process?
Yes, it's a continuous thing. And then you can have things like, hey, we checked this algorithm, but then applied it to a different population where someone was recruiting from maybe a very high performing school with more people of one demographic group and a community college with people from another demographic group. And in that group, some bias creeps in. So like constantly watching and mitigating if necessary. And that's definitely part of EEOC guidelines. At least once a year, you do that. With technology, we can be monitoring much more often than that and keeping on top of it.
How do you see the role of the recruiter evolving as AI becomes more prevalent in the selection process?
We talked about a lot of these mundane tasks, a lot of these painful things, sifting through resumes, trying to schedule, you know, all the back and forth and missing candidates and things that take days or weeks, taking hours or days, right? That's where we're headed. That's a lot of what we've seen is, hey, I can just keep this process moving along faster with a lot less clogged in the gears and spend more time with the candidate. So you have the top candidate, they want to talk to a person, you want to sell them on your company. That's where you should be spending your time rather than sifting through 1,000 resumes, which is horrible. Horrible experience.
And what about for candidates that might be nervous about being assessed by AI or would rather not be assessed by AI at all? What would you say to those folks?
We have a lot of data that shows that these tools are faster and fairer than the old ways of hiring. But at the end of the day, like candidates feeling comfortable is really important. And that's why we've done third-party audits and explainability statement. It's always been practiced in the assessment world that you need to have opt out for or accommodation for people with disabilities, opt out of having AI used on you as a part of GDPR. It's a part of a lot of laws that are coming online, making sure people understand what's happening and how they're going to be assessed. Hey, we're paying attention to your language. We're not paying attention to your skin color, like just being very clear, but then also giving candidates an alternative path to their assessment. That is up to employers to map out what that path is. I would just say from my perspective, knowing what I know, it depends on the company what that alternative path is. And it could be right back to the old biased ways of doing things, or you don't get a fair evaluation because they're overwhelmed. The reason they're using automation is to try to be more fair. So going through the process is probably going to be a good thing for you as a candidate. It helps them evaluate people at scale in a way that they might not be able to do if you opt out. So it depends completely on the company at that point, but my take is that it's better to go through this process. Make sure you understand it, get all the kind of training you can and before you go through the virtual hiring process.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be harder and harder to opt out. You'll be really going like kind of old school, and it'd probably be challenging for that candidate, frankly, right? Because I think it'd probably be breaking the process that they've followed. But there are so many applications now, when you think about with LinkedIn, Indeed, other platforms, these job sites. When you think about Indeed, for instance, some of a high volume job, someone's probably applying not to just your job, but they might be applying to 12 other jobs in that same day. What that means is, even though there's only one candidate, all these companies are getting applications. So now every company is more overwhelmed. Tell me if I'm wrong. The more companies are overwhelmed because there's more applications coming through the systems, which then they need AI tools, other tools to help weed out those. Right.
Yeah.
And again, it's doing the same thing, saying, well, I've got to continue to apply more to more jobs. And a lot of times in hourly roles like that, speed wins. So whoever quickly get back to those candidates, talk with them, get them vetted, are the ones that are most likely to get that hire because they applied to so many. So it just seems like it's a broken process for a lot of people. And I hear the same thing. People who I know are looking for jobs who are more professional roles, they're applying, and you see this on LinkedIn, people apply to 100, 200, 300 jobs and never hearing back. Do you have any insight on what you think the tools are doing, or is it the companies, or just people overwhelmed? It's a unique perspective you would have. I don't have as much detail on what's going on.
It's like a weird problem, right, where companies want to open the funnel as much as possible, but then they're overwhelmed. We don't want people dropping out of the process, but also there's so many people. It's like, tight is this funnel? LinkedIn have made it. The fact that people can work remotely, the fact that we have the internet, like we've opened up, you don't have to go hand in your resume at a mom and pop store down the street. You can a lot of times one click to apply or something like that, which seems great. But then, yes, it causes these problems where it's like a lot of people, and they're not, most companies are not evaluating all those people fairly. They just can't. And they just get kind of lost in the mix. So I think, like I mentioned before, I had this in my hiring experience. You go through a lot and maybe you get many interviews and then you didn't get the job, like you were runner up. And they often tell you, like, we'll keep you in mind if anything else comes up. They have no process to do that. So maybe that individual person is thinking, if I'm hiring for this specific role, but the company as a whole is just losing candidates. And it's so wasteful. You have these runners up or these silver medal candidates that were obviously really good. They're looking for a job. They want to work for your company. And you're just throwing them away. And you're throwing away all the assessment they did and everything to start over every time you post a job. This can depend on what the job market is like, right? If talent is really abundant, companies are like, yeah, we'll just post a new job and we get a bunch of candidates and we'll find someone. That's shifting. And a lot of people don't know that it's ever going to shift back where talent is more scarce. You might feel overwhelmed, but the actual diamonds in the rough in there are going to be hard to find. So how do you get to that quicker and then keep that person around? So that's what I'm working on right now is, let's help the candidate. And we have customers who often, like, literally a week later, they're posting same job, but maybe a different location down the street or something. You don't even have to start over. Just look, here's your person. Do you want to reach out to them? Just have the process continue. I think that's going to be great for candidates. It's going to help candidates figure out things that they could do. AI is going to really help people figure out how to transfer their skill. Jobs that you might not have thought you were a fit for. Being a barista has a lot of things in common with being a mail carrier. There's these unexpected connections in terms of what skills you have, personality, interest, and we can get a better understanding of that with data, better data on jobs, better data on people.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens around that. And I also hope organizations can be more effective and thoughtful with the applicants they get, to your point of like mining silver medalists or bronze medalists and thinking about those candidates that really were a pretty good fit. Because you're right, it feels pretty impersonal right now, especially when you don't get to a human. Yeah, I think that's, people are really frustrated when they don't really understand why they didn't get called or what happened. And yeah, I think that was the hard part. So
that probably will not go away, but maybe AI will help, because maybe we'll come back and say, hey, we don't think you're fit for this job, but hey, there's three other ones that we've automatically applied you for,
you know. Yeah. For a company, that would be at least the benefit of like, oh, good, there's something else maybe that's a fit. But,
and even that communication, like you're talking about, it's keeping in communication with someone. Maybe it's a chat bot, but it's better than nothing. We're going to check in with you. We're going to tell you where you're at in the process. We're going to tell you if you didn't get the job, rather than making you wait 9 months. And then, I mean, this happened to me where, like, you see an email like a year later. I mean, I assumed you went a different direction, right? Silly, but keeping the candidate in the know, or if they have any questions, these AI systems are really good at, they can look at the company documentation and answer your questions about benefit. That's not something that, you know, we could do that in the middle of the night with a bot rather than a human, having to wait for a human. So I think it will make people feel more connected, even though they know it's a bot, but just having more visibility into the process as they go.
Let's talk a little bit about advice for HR leaders. I think people are probably thinking, okay, Lindsay, well, I'm just getting started to explore AI in my hiring process. Like, what's a good first step? Where should I start?
I mentioned the standardization, because I think when 8 or 9 years ago, when we started using AI in hiring and we were a pioneer in doing that, we realized, okay, well, let's take a step back, because people aren't even asking good questions, or their process hasn't been thought through very well, or so many hiring managers are just doing it their way. And we need to have some standardization. So kind of getting buttoned up with, what is our process? What tools do we want? And I think really looking at the landscape of vendors, there's a lot of buzzwords being thrown around and there's a lot of like sexy tech. But when it comes down to it, can you get the answer? I firmly believe if you understand something deeply, you should be able to explain it in a way that people understand, even if they're not technical. And maybe not every single salesperson can do that. But having that deeper understanding, getting your questions answered, what documentation is out there? Is there any science behind this? Because there are a lot of things I've seen where it's like, that looks cool, but do we know that that actually predicts attrition or retention? Do we know that that actually helps you hire better? What does that number mean? And so there are some things that I'm concerned are kind of snake oil, but they kind of check the box for people. Having those conversations, asking vendors, they kind of have to prove out the ROI on their solutions and that they actually work. It's a whole process. We have a lot of customers right now who they're trying to consolidate. There's all these tools and we have 10 different tools in the process. How can we streamline this and together and make it? Because at every point where you change to a different thing, you're losing time. So how do we look at our whole process as one thing and figure out how it flows smoothly?
What about for HR professionals who are listening, who want to future-proof their careers? Like, what skills should they be developing now, especially in relation to AI?
I mentioned like playing with ChatGPT. Everybody should just go do that, right? Make a free account and just get a feel for it. I know sometimes people go in and kind of like, I don't know what to ask, but you know, Google around, read about it, play with it a little bit. I think that gives you a lot of a feel for like, okay, this is state of the art and this is kind of how it's working. Even doing that and not necessarily being technical, I think it helps you take a little more of an educated, skeptical view on what you see. I see a lot of vendors, not just in HR tech, but in a lot of spaces talking about like, we're going to use data to solve this problem. And my initial thought is just, what data? How do you think you have that clean data that's you're going to learn from, right? Like, that's the biggest problem. If you don't have nice, clean data to learn from, you're stuck. The algorithms are easy. It's actually the data that makes things work. So I think, but playing around as much as you can, reading, it's never too late. I think a lot of times people think, I'm not technical, so I can't learn this thing. But even just doing an online course with some really basic generative AI or coding up a little machine learning algorithm to predict, to read handwriting or whatever. There's a lot of fun, pretty accessible things you can do if you want to just educate yourself a little more and speak the language.
Definitely agree. There's so much out there that you can really study and learn from. And there's a lot of great AI newsletters as well, if you want to start to keep up and hear what's going on. I mean, I think it's like anything else, just every day learn a little bit more about it, but nothing's better than experimenting. Lindsay, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I would say potential. I'm kind of stealing from the higher view, like kind of category we think about human potential intelligence. To me, that's what it's all about. We don't want to look at the past. We want to look at what you're capable of. We assess people. We want to move more and more toward, yes, sometimes there are hard skills or qualifications, certifications you need for this job. But what can you do? Show me like what you can do. We had customers where like we saw actually a counter correlation between experience counting money and how accurate they were in this exercise about returning change. So I'm not saying that always happens, but it's a great example of like, you shouldn't assume that past experience predicts future behavior necessarily. Let's measure it. Let's look at what people are capable of, and that helps them form their career path.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you for coming and talk to us about AI. Potential is the future of HR. Hopefully AI unlocks more of our potential as well. It's a great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Lindsay for sharing why hiring needs to remain human first, even in the age of AI. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with one other person. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Carolyn Roach. Carolyn is the Chief Human Resources Officer at XPO. And XPO is one of the largest and most respected providers of LTL, freight transportation shipping in North America, with revenue over $8 billion. In my conversation with Carolyn, she gives us an inside look at how she and her team at XPO have been building a trust-driven culture that has been the key to the terrific financial results. This is a great conversation and one you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.